Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record for Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. We begin our reading today on the front page with a story entitled, Not Unless the Village Has an Extra $4 Million. For more than 30 years, the small Piatt County village of Bement employed a rare arrangement for its fire department, a full-time fire chief. The late Steve Rittenhouse worked a shift of 24 hours on, 24 hours off, living at the firehouse during his on hours. He also worked a township job, current fire chief Tony Price said. He was paid an annual salary of about $36,000 by the Fire Protection District. In earlier years, Bement also employed several firefighters on a part-time basis, so the firehouse was permanently staffed. Such an arrangement is rare in Illinois. Some larger towns employ a combination of full-time chief and volunteer department, or an all-full-time department, or, like area communities, including Paxton and Rantoul, an all-volunteer department. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, Paxton Mayor Bill Ingalls said of his own town's department, headed by Fire Chief Danny Kingren. Ingold said there has been no discussion of changing from the all-volunteer arrangement in the Ford County community of about 4,200. It would be too expensive, he said. In nearby Rantoul, with a population of 12,769, the subject has been discussed but never advanced very far for the same reason, the cost. Mayor Chuck Smith said he remembers the topic being discussed in the late 1990s when he was a member of the village board. There had been some discussion in the past on many levels, Smith said. We ran the economic numbers versus our budget. At the time, it wasn't feasible to do it. With a small town like that, that's an ongoing cost, and we've had budget issues for many, many years, and it's not feasible for us. He said he and former village administrator Jeff Fingelsuch had kicked around the idea of a full-time fire chief, which he said is probably more doable than having a full-time fire department. The benefit of a full-time chief, Smith said, is to make sure we're having everything in order when we have a fire, or to meet the demands of working with other communities under mutual aid. Smith said being a full-time fire chief probably wouldn't be for everyone. Even though Rantoul Fire Chief Kenny Waters is doing a great job, I don't think he would want his job to be full-time chief. But having at least a few full-time fire staff on the village payroll might be advantageous in the future, especially if Rantoul grows. We're not there yet, Smith said. Our growth hasn't been the growth we would like to see happen. With construction of a sports complex and the resulting economic growth, we might be able to balance that between full-time and part-time. The next big expense for Rantoul is likely to be the purchase of a larger ladder truck. Rantoul's 75-foot ladder truck would not be able to handle a fire in an upper floor of the Holiday Inn Express, for example. Waters said he doesn't think a change to full-time department will happen anytime soon. Not unless the village has an extra $4 million, he said. Rantoul's arrangement is different than Paxton's. Rantoul pays for the department facilities upkeep, equipment, and firefighter pay, whereas Paxton's fire department pays its own costs. Rantoul firemen are paid for calls they answer and if they attend the department's two training sessions a month. Former Rantoul Mayor Kathy Potagrossi said she doesn't remember the topic of a full-time fire chief or department coming up formally before the village board, she did research the topic once. She said the volunteer department has done such a good job that changing the setup was not imperative. Also, I found that many much larger cities across the country operate very much like we did. And in a sidebar story, while hours commitment can be daunting, most area departments could never go full-time. According to the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the IAFC, there are more than 1 million firefighters in the United States. Of that total, about 800,000 are volunteers. The rest are paid or career firefighters. Some career departments have a full-time chief, others have a full-time chief and a few full-time firefighters, while the rest have an all-career department. Having an all-volunteer department doesn't necessarily hurt quality. Danville has a full-time fire department and has an ISO rating of 3.0. Rantoul's all-volunteer department also has a 3.0 rating in the village and out to 5 miles, while Paxton is 4.0 in the city, 6.0 out to 5 miles from the city borders, and 10.0 farther than 5 miles. An ISO fire insurance rating is a score from 1 to 10 that indicates how well protected a community is by the fire department. The lower the number, the higher the rating. Fire department funding can come from a variety of sources. Paxton's department is self-sufficient. It does not receive financial assistance from the city of Paxton, Fire Chief Danny Kringren said. The department built up its own firehouse and buys its own equipment. Also on the front page, Casper commits to Greenville to play soccer. Gibson City. One of the best players in Gibson City Fisher soccer history has signed to continue his soccer career at Greenville University. Ethan Casper said Greenville, located in downstate Illinois, about 50 miles from St. Louis, being a Christian university is what helped draw him to attend. "I'm a devout Christian, and that was a big thing for me when choosing where to go," Casper said. Greenville was on Casper's radar from the beginning. "They were the first college that ever reached out to me," he said. "I went to a showcase there when I was a freshman and really just fell in love with the school." Greenville continued to impress Casper as the process went on. "They also have a really good music program, which is what I'm going to study," Casper said. Casper will be a goalkeeper, which is what he focused on in his senior year. "I was not a goalkeeper originally, and I moved from striker to goalie later in high school after my coach asked me to try it in practice." Casper gives all the credit to the many coaches he has had throughout the years. "Having the coaches that continued to push me and make to where I was never satisfied was what helped me get to where I am today," he said. The words "good job" were not in any of those coaches' vocabulary. "Good job" is the two of the most evil words in the English language, Casper said. "You can always do better than what you did on the last play." Before Casper heads to school, he does have some things he wants to achieve. "I'm pretty small for a goalkeeper, so I want to work out and gain some more leg muscle," Casper said. "I would also like to win some tournaments in club soccer before I head to school." Casper plays for his club team out of Mahomet in the spring. Casper said playing time was not guaranteed at Greenville, but that is not something he is worried about. "I've not always been given the starting spot, so it's not something that I've had to have. I'm excited to get to work and earn playing time." Casper had a very decorated career in high school, raking up awards of the 2017 News Gazette All-Area Honorable Mention, 2018 News Gazette All-Area Second Team, 2018 IHSSCA All-Sectional, 2018 Rantoul Press Defender of the Year, 2018 Fisher GCMS Most Dedicated Player, 2019 News Gazette All-Area Second Team, and 2019 IHSSCA All-Sectional, 2019 Fisher GCMS Offensive Player of the Year. Also on the front page, PBL GCMS Fisher students taking part in CEO program. Fisher. The Fisher School Board received an update on the Prairieland CEO Creating Entrepreneurial Opportunities program at its most recent meeting. Shanna Horton of Fisher, the facilitator, reviewed the class's first semester activities. Horton said there are 2 students from Fisher and 3 students each from Gibson City, Melvin Sibley, and Paxton Buckley Lota school districts enrolled. Applications for the next year's program will be accepted through March 1st. Horton said students are required to arrive at class promptly at 6:40 a.m., dress professionally, and display basic social skills such as shaking hands and making eye contact in any interaction with the others, such as the business sponsors of the program. Horton said the group is working through the book Life Lessons by the program's founder. The class also visits various businesses. The first group project was to find funding and/or sponsorships for their individual name card lanyards. The students ended up raising $650 by creating and selling t-shirts, which more than covered their expenses. Their next big project is to present a murder mystery theater dinner at the Cruz Center in Gibson City. Horton said that the group missed its initial projected date for the event, February 1st. Horton said the students needed to regroup and refine its plans, and now the show was set for 5:30 p.m., February 29th. The class is hiring actors from the Chicago area, and the dinner will be catered. Horton told the board to watch for advertising on social media and elsewhere. Now news from Paxton. Bank contributes to PBL Education Foundation's Pillar campaign. The Frederick Community Bank has joined the list of area businesses and private donors participating in the PBL Education Foundation's Pillar campaign to jumpstart their endowment fund, according to an information provided. The most recent gift brings the PBL Endowments Fund total to $616,000. The foundation distributes the income generated from this fund to the school district, which in turn uses the monies to maintain and update technology within grades K through 12. Formerly First National Bank in Paxton, the Frederick Community Bank has a long history of support for the foundation and our communities. Bank President and PBL alumnus Justin Swan said he strongly encourages all area businesses to do what they can to support the foundation. The strength of our school district is the backbone of our community. As the community bank in town, we hope this donation demonstrates how strongly we feel about supporting our local school district. And while Swan is an alumnus of the school district, the bank's family also has strong ties and loyalties to other communities. In 1933, the First National Bank of Paxton was reorganized as the First National Bank in Paxton by a group of area business leaders, Sherman Frederick, David A. Arthur Frederick, G.M. Lundahl, A.R. Sheldon, G.C. Bobo, H.P. Larson, and W.A. Kreitzer. Descendants of the Frederick family continue to be active in the management of the bank. The late Philip Sweet, husband of 66 years to Nancy Frederick Sweet, a Paxton alumna, and son-in-law of Art and Minnie Frederick of Paxton, served as the bank's board chairman until his passing. Today, Art and Minnie Frederick's grandson, Kirk, and David Sweet serve on the board of the Frederick Community Bank. In addition to their support of the foundation through the bank, Philip, Kirk, and David Sweet have also honored the family legacy with their personal gift of $25,000 to the Pillar campaign. Niewald Foundation chairman commented that the bank has been a staunch supporter of the foundation since it began 21 years ago. She teasingly added, "They have always stepped up when asked, without any arm twisting." PBL Education Foundation's Pillar campaign will culminate this fall during the high school's homecoming celebration in September. At that time, a time capsule containing historical data and pictures supplied by each of the donors will be buried at a location still to be decided, under a boulder that has a plaque affixed to it with all the donor names. The PBL Endowment Fund was created in 2017 using gifts from Hall of Fame inductee Frank Drendel, the estate of local businessman Nick Fiorello, but a minimum fund balance of $250,000 was necessary before the foundation could distribute income from the invested funds to the district. In the fall of 2019, the foundation received an anonymous donation of $250,000 to the endowment fund. At this time, the board decided to use this donation as a springboard for the ongoing Pillar campaign. The goal of the Pillar campaign is to jumpstart the endowment fund by acquiring as many gifts of $25,000 or more in a very short period of time, 18 months, so distributions to the district can be started. To date, the campaign continues to be a success with additional gifts being received monthly. Already, the foundation has distributed almost $25,000 to the district in the 2019-2020 school year. The foundation's annual campaign is also wrapping up. The annual direct mail campaign gifts are placed in the foundation's general fund, which supports literacy initiatives in grades K through 5, staff grants, and additional technology initiatives. This year's annual campaign gifts to date total over $25,000, Newald said. We usually see a lot of donations come in during the month of January, especially from businesses. I don't know if they are waiting to see how their year ends or if another factor is in play, but we gladly accept gifts any time of the year. Other area loyal businesses that chose to participate in the Pillar campaign include Hudson Drug and Hallmark Shop and Gibson Area Hospital and Health Services. Now we have health news from the Capitol. Pritzker signs bill capping insulin costs. Patients to pay no more than $100 for a 30-day supply under state-regulated insurance plans. Springfield. Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a bill into law Friday capping the out-of-pocket cost of prescription insulin for many people in Illinois. Senate Bill 667, sponsored by Senator Andy Menar, a Bunker Hill Democrat, caps the cost at $100 for a 30-day supply, a significant reduction for many diabetes patients currently paying hundreds of dollars per month for the life-saving medication. The law takes effect January 1, 2021. Each year after that, insurers are allowed to raise the out-of-pocket cost by the rate of healthcare inflation. Diabetes affects people from all walks of life. It doesn't discriminate between those who can afford medication and unconscionable costs and those who cannot, Pritzker said. Megan Blair, a diabetes patient from Harristown, said she has frequently been forced to ration her insulin supply because she couldn't afford the $1,800 per month she was being charged. I've been in and out of the hospital, close to being in a diabetic coma, more than once, due to not taking my medication like I should. Not because I wanted to, because I had no choice but to ration the insulin I did have, she said. Diabetes affects more than 30 million people in the United States, according to the American Diabetes Association. It's a condition in which the body does not properly regulate its blood sugar level, either because it doesn't produce its own insulin, known as type 1 diabetes, or because the body doesn't use insulin properly, which is type 2 diabetes. All patients with type 1 diabetes and many with type 2 rely on regular insulin injections. Without them, they can suffer severe health consequences and even death. But the price of insulin has been skyrocketing in recent years, nearly tripling between 2002 and 2013, according to the American Diabetes Association. With the signing of SB 667, Illinois becomes only the third state to cap out-of-pocket insulin prices. The law applies to people who are covered by health plans subject to state regulation. That includes most kinds of private insurance, the state's Medicaid plan, and the state employee's health plan. It does not, however, apply to self-insured plans, which many large companies with thousands of employees offer. Those plans are regulated under federal law. The law also does not limit what prices insulin manufacturers are allowed to charge for the medication. It controls only how much of an out-of-pocket cost insurers can require patients to pay, essentially shifting a greater share of the cost onto insurance companies. I think one thing that we've all recognized in this process is there is an awful lot of middlemen that have caused a spike in the price and that we need to work out among themselves how they're going to deal with this change, Pritzker said. The law also calls on the Illinois Department of Insurance and Department of Human Services to conduct a study of insulin pricing practices and the variables that contribute to the pricing habits of insurance plans. The agencies are supposed to submit a report on that study by November 1st, along with other policy recommendations to control the cost of prescription insulin. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Wednesday, January 29, 2020. Bruce R. Carey. Bruce R. Carey, 48, of Rankin, passed away on January 17, 2020, at the Carl Foundation in Urbana. Memorial visitation will be Saturday, February 1, 2020, from 10 a.m. to 11:45 at Rankin United Methodist Church in Rankin. Memorial service will follow at 12 p.m. with Pastor Molly Spencer Hawk officiating. Memorials may be made to the family wishes. Shallon Dell, C.D., Malding. On January 24, 2020, Shallon Dell, C.D., Malding, loving father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, passed away at the age of 100. Funeral services were held January 28th at the Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton, and burial followed in the Glen Cemetery with military rites. Memorial contributions can be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Maxine D. Anderson. Maxine D. Anderson, 88, of Paxton, passed away at 1:52 a.m. Monday, January 27, 2020, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living. Funeral services were held Thursday, January 30, 2020, at Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Dave Parker officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery, Paxton. Memorials can be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Those are all the obituaries we have in this week's paper. As we have read all the local news in the Ford County Record for this week, we'll turn to the opinion page with a column by Representative Tom Bennett. Foyd car renewal delays continue. Check your status online. Illinois firearm owners are continuing to encounter delays in applying for renewals of their firearm owner's identification cards, the FOID card, and concealed carry licenses, the CCL. The State Police Firearm Services Bureau, which handles the applications, is only staffed with 5 people, and it has been difficult for applicants to reach a live person when they contact the agency for help. The state police said they are aware of the problem and are working to upgrade their system. Their response includes the addition of a voice-over internet protocol system, which will streamline their response to calls. In the meantime, to avoid delays on the phone, FOID and CCL applicants are encouraged to visit www.isp.stateillinoisfoidinquiry.com. to find out the information and to check their application status online. I believe that's on the State Police website. You can also contact my district office in Watseka and Pontiac for assistance. This spring, I am co-sponsoring House Bill 4067, which would repeal the FOID Act and eliminate the FOID card altogether. Census Day coming soon. On April 1st, we'll try to get a count of the total population of the United States and every unit of government within. It is critical that this count be accurate, as it determines everything from how many voices our region will have in Congress and the state legislature to how billions of dollars in government funding will be distributed. If any area is undercounted, it will have a harder time getting back its fair share of the taxes its residents have paid in. Individual responses to the census questionnaires are confidential and are not shared with other government agencies. To make sure Illinois is counted accurately and fully, the state has established a complete count committee and is urging local governments and civic groups to do the same in their community. To find out how to help, visit www.illinoiscensus2020.com for more information. It is essential that every Illinoisan answer the census questionnaire and be counted. How much do we owe? As of the time of this writing, the state of Illinois owes $7,116,010,691 in unpaid bills to state vendors. 1 year ago, the backlog stood at $7.4 billion. This figure represents the amount of bills submitted to the Office of the Comptroller and still awaiting payment. It does not include debts that can only be estimated, such as our unfunded pension liability, which is subject to a wide range of factors and has been estimated to be more than $137 billion. Are we saving money? I am sometimes asked if state government is doing anything that actually saves money. It's a good question, because for all the talk about belt tightening in government, we haven't seen much in practice. That's a major reason why I voted against raising the income tax in 2017 and against the most recent state budget. But believe it or not, there have been several laws enacted which will save the state money. A lot of these changes have to do with using technology to cut costs. Here is one such example. On January 1st, a new law went into effect which directs the Secretary of State to set up an electronic lien and title system which will streamline that agency's process and reduce the cost of handling, storing, and mailing paper titles. Other agencies have made similar changes involving electronic records. Another way we can save money in state government is through looking at existing laws and regulations and bringing them up to date. One such change went into effect last year. The state was wasting money on unnecessary vehicle maintenance because the law required state vehicles to have their oil changed every 3,000 miles. It was pointed out that newer cars only have to have their oil changed every 5,000 or even 10,000 miles, but the state was still making the change at 3,000 regardless. We changed the law to scrap the 3,000-mile requirement and instructed state agencies to follow the vehicle's owner manual instead. By cutting down on unnecessary maintenance, we prevented some waste. Of course, these changes are just drops in the bucket compared to the billions of dollars in the state budget every year. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't keep looking for small efficiencies. So the answer to the question is yes, we are doing things to save money, but we need to do a lot more. Great crowd at Watsika FFA lunch. We had a great turnout for the Watsika FFA lunch and auction. This is an important cause because these students are the future leaders of Illinois' largest and most important industry. FFA is such a great program for teaching responsibility and accountability. Thank you to Mr. Wilkie for your leadership in bringing everyone together, to all the volunteers who helped out, and to the members of the community for stopping by and supporting the students. Senate elects a new president. The Illinois Senate met for one day this week to elect a new Senate president, electing Senator Mark Harmon, a Democrat of Oak Park, to replace the outgoing president, Senator John Cullerton, a Democrat of Chicago. Democrats hold a 39-19 majority in the Senate. Senator Harmon, 53 years old, has served in the Senate since 2003. He is a graduate of Knox College in Galesburg and the University of Chicago, and he and his wife Teresa have three children. He joins Senate Republican leader Bill Brady, House Speaker Michael Madigan, and House Republican leader Jim Durkin among the General Assembly's four legislative leaders. Did you know? The most common county name in the United States is Washington County, which appears in 31 states. Second place goes to Jefferson County in 26. The most common non-presidential names for U.S. counties are Franklin with 25 and Clay and Montgomery, which each appear in 18 states. All five county names can be found in Illinois. As always, you can reach me, this is Senator Representative Tom Bennett, through the contact form at representativebennett.com or by phone at 815-432-0106 in Watsika or 815-844-9179 in Pontiac. Thank you for the honor of serving as our district's representative in Springfield. That's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Record. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings are available on our website. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again real soon.